Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 a.m. It's Tuesday. That means it's two for Tuesday. You're being two for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. Request them now. We'll play them a little bit later on. Right now, though, we want to welcome our regular guest, Tom Appel, to the show. He joins us once a month. He is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, and he writes for their Daily Drive blog. You can check him out at consumerguide.com and follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And if you have any at all automotive questions or concerns or car-related questions, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, and let's welcome Tom to the show. Hey, Tom.
Hey.
How are you, man?
I am very good. How are you?
All right. Okay. First of all, as we always do, give everybody the info on Consumer Guide Automotive.
Yeah, thanks. ConsumerGuide.com. That's a bunch of good, useful new car and used car reviews. If you're shopping around, have a look at ConsumerGuide.com. We also try to have some fun with the car news. Check out our blog. You can get there from ConsumerGuide.com or go there directly, the CGDailyDrive.com blog. All sorts of fun stuff there.
All right, very cool. I always ask you, what are you driving? What have you been driving?
Oh, I'm driving something interesting this early part of the week. I'm in the 2019 Mitsubishi Outlander Plug-in Hybrid Electric Vehicle, or PHEV. Yeah, interesting car. This is the Mitsubishi Outlander, which is Mitsubishi's compact crossover with a plug-in hybrid function. So you can plug it in for about 20, not in this weather, but usually 20 to 23 miles of range. That's pure electric, and when that runs out, it runs like a regular hybrid. So if you drive, if you live fairly close to where you work during the week, you're pure electric all the time.
Wow.
And if you need to take a long trip on the weekend, go up to Milwaukee or something, it works like a hybrid.
Wow, that's amazing. How does it drive?
Just fine. The Outlander isn't one of my favorite vehicles, but I really like it in pure electric mode. It's actually a smoother, sportier vehicle in that mode.
Okay, I hear a cat.
You do hear a cat. It's just in time for me to be on the radio.
What's the cat's name?
This is Bally.
Bally, okay.
And Bally is old.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I had a cat. My parents and I had a cat, lived 23 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So we've got five more years of this. Okay.
Well, very cool. All right. Well, so what is this going for, by the way, the current car? What are they that you're driving? What are they charging?
It's sort of a one-price car. There's not a lot of options for it. About $36,000.
Wow. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
And what were you driving before that, Tom?
I was in the BMW X1. Interesting car. This is BMW's smallest crossover, the X1. A lot of people call it a fake BMW because it uses front drive architecture and a transverse engine, which they sort of need to do to hit a price point. But I find it to be a lot of fun to drive, surprisingly roomy, and not all that expensive for a BMW crossover. The vehicle I was driving, modestly equipped, was about $45,000, which is a lot for a small crossover, but not a lot for a BMW crossover.
Yeah, well, that makes sense, yeah. I mean, yeah. $45,000 for anything with BMW on it seems
surprisingly affordable.
Exactly. Tom Appel is here again, Consumer Guide Automotive. He'll answer any and all of your car-related and auto-related questions. If you need some help or advice, he can help you out there. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Interesting story here involving Tesla, Tom.
Yeah.
They're going to move to dismantle their store network, and some people think this is a you know, kind of a risky thing to do. Some people think it's innovative. Tell me, give everybody the details on this and what's going on with Tesla.
Yeah, it's a really interesting story. So Tesla had set up, much to the chagrin of car dealers everywhere, factory-owned stores. And they had 250 stores nationwide, roughly, all of which were factory-owned, and they did their business through those. So that was where you could find a car, test drive a car, and eventually purchase a car.
Mm-hmm.
But per Tesla, 81% of the vehicles they sell are ordered online without a test drive. So what they're inferring from this is they don't need a dealer network. I find that an astonishing leap because at some point people, I would think, if they go more mainstream, are going to want to test drive a vehicle. But this is going to be a huge cost savings for them, so they're going to go ahead with this project. I don't know how many stores they're going to close. It's not going to be all 250 because they still need to deliver vehicles and service vehicles.
Right. Now, so what is the, what are they saying is the reason behind this, and what are other people saying is the reason behind this move?
Yeah, it's a cost savings move, and I think people understand that. I think most analysts and most naysayers are saying it's pretty draconian. I'm inclined to agree. I've been to one of the Tesla stores, and I found it to be a very nice store. They had a huge amount of inventory there. I presume most of that was waiting for delivery.
Yeah.
But I think that the stores serve a lot of function, not just for sales, but they remind people that the brand exists. They should look nice and remind people of the brand in terms of iconography and just general look and feel. So it's weird not to have stores at all, but we'll see how this goes for them, and we'll see how many of them they actually close.
And this isn't going to make other companies do this, right? I mean, just
no, very unlikely. Part of the reason it won't happen is because virtually all other cars sold in America are sold through franchise outlets.
Right.
And those are privately owned, and those people don't want it to go away. So,
yeah,
manufacturers can't just close them down.
It just seems weird to me to buy a car online. I don't know why. You know, without a test drive, without actually seeing the car or physically being there, it's something that I would never do.
No, and it just speaks to the contrarian nature of the Tesla buyer, in that they would buy a vehicle sight unseen. You don't negotiate the price of a Tesla. The price is the price that there is online, minus any discounts they're currently offering. But it is a very strange thing. And, yeah, I want, if I'm buying a car, and I think most consumers, they want to see it, they want to test drive it, they want to ask questions about it, they want someone to show them how to use it.
Right.
It's a very big leap to assume that most people are not going to want to test drive a car.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's a completely different ball game when you're ordering a radio from Amazon. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's a little bit different. It's not as significant as, you know, a big investment as a car, ordering a frying pan from Amazon. You can do that without much risk. But like to get a car, I don't know. I just don't understand that.
You did hit on something really interesting there, though, Nick, and that's that increasingly I think cars have become commodities, and I think people are worrying less and less about the dynamic experience of driving a car and more about things like connectivity and range and autonomy, and I don't know that the next generation of car buyers is going to care much about how it rides and drives.
Well, when these things happen, Tom, I mean, as a person who's been a car guy his whole life, when we have these sort of developments and these stories, don't sometimes you just shake your head and go, what's going on?
Almost every day.
Yeah.
I realize that this is happening, but it just sort of saddens me that people don't love cars anymore. You know, that they've moved to appliance from thing that you took pride of ownership in. And I realize that's really what's happening, and it's unstoppable, but it makes me a little sad.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy, I got to say. We have a quick question here from a listener before we break for the news.
Sure.
Tom, and if you got any kind of automotive related car question or concern, 312-981-7200 talk or text. Here's a text from the 312 area code. Thoughts about the new Honda Passport?
Oh, well, the Passport is a new vehicle that slots between the compact CR-V and the midsize Pilot. I haven't driven it personally. Our guy Rick Cotta drove it on the road, came away very impressed. It's manufacturers keep trying to squeeze more product into their crossover lineup, and this is an example of that. And one of the ways that Honda's differentiating it from the rest of the lineup is that they're giving it sort of an off-roady feel. So this one's a little bit more trail-ready than the rest of the Honda lineup.
Okay. And then another one before we break here. 815 area code says, when a car company discontinues a model, does that kill the resale price because I own a Fusion and a Cruise? Am I screwed?
kind of. It used to be a bigger deal. First of all, there's no problem because those manufacturers are still around, so maintenance and support are there forever. As for it hurting resale value, maybe a little bit. But when you get to use vehicles, as long as they look good and still feel good, I'm not sure that hurts the resale value a lot.
Okay. All right. And by the way, this whole Tesla story is really, because I mean, I read the whole story. There's a lot of interesting detail in it, and it's a pretty fascinating one, not just in terms of car sales, but in terms of, you know, business. And by the way, Elon Musk had a pretty good week in the other thing that he does, that's SpaceX.
Yeah, it's funny. You would think he'd be more distracted than he seems.
Yeah. This is a unique dude. We've talked about this a lot, Tom.
Yeah.
You know, I have two, you know, two of my favorite regular guests are you and Rod Pyle, and Rod Pyle is a space expert. And he's actually going to be on later this week, and he's got two new space-related books, and he's amazing and knowledgeable, you know, works one-on-one with NASA, has been in the space business for many, many, many years. And so whenever you're on and whenever he's on, we get two different angles of Elon Musk. You know what I mean? We get the two sides of Elon Musk covered regularly on this show.
Yeah, I mean, Elon has become the guy now who's not allowed to tweet about his company or he's going to get in trouble with the SEC. This is a crazy guy.
He is, man. It's just fascinating on both sides of the spectrum, really.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Tom, hang on, okay?
Will do.
All right, Tom Appel is with us. He's great. He's the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. You can check out his blog, The Daily Drive. Follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom, or simply call or text right now for any automotive or car-related question or concern. 312-981-7200. We will get back to our conversation with Tom Appel and your calls and your questions. Again, 312-981-7200. More car talk coming up after the news, which is up right after this. Welcome back, everybody. How's it going? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. And it's Tuesday. That means two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs. 312-981-7200. We will remember Luke Perry and Keith Flint. And we just got a text in that said that King Kong Bundy passed away yesterday, too. Legendary wrestler, King Kong Bundy. I wasn't even aware of that. Didn't hear that. And then it's also yesterday was the 25th anniversary of John Candy's death. And another text reminds us that today, the 5th, is the 37th anniversary of John Belushi's passing. That's Margaret in Bridgeport. And I'll never forget how I found out about it. I was working at McDonald's, and my friend Scott Fricke, who I went to high school with, called at work and was like, "Hey, man, I know you're in the middle of working, but John Belushi passed away." And I was like, because he was one of my heroes. John Belushi was one of my heroes. So anyway, that's, I can't believe that was 37 years ago. So anyway, we're also going to talk about the best political movies of all time. And I hope you can all come out tonight to my screening of Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, starring Jimmy Stewart. Starts at 8 o'clock. $10. Parking is free. AMCtheaters.com. Reserve your seats now. But Tom Appel is with us right now. He's the publisher for Consumer Guide Automotive. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And let's welcome Tom back to the show. Welcome back, Tom.
Thank you.
All right. So we have some people who are texting and calling in with some questions. Tom, would you like to help them out?
I would love to.
Okay. Here's Donna on WGN. Hi, Donna. Go ahead.
Hi, Nick. I've got a car that's been sitting in the garage for over a year, and it had a full tank of gas before I went into the hospital. It's been sitting, and I don't know if I can start it up or if I need to put some sort of additive in to start it up, if I'm going to do any irreparable harm to the car if I start it without having checked it out.
So the car's been sitting in the garage, Tom, for a full tank of gas for about a year. What's the next step?
Yeah, there's not a lot you can do about it right now. The additive that people add to gas usually is something they put in there before they intend to store a car. And there's a product called Stable, for example, that is supposed to prevent the gasoline from breaking down. But that said, a year isn't really that long, and gasoline is better than it used to be. And I wouldn't worry about that much about the gas that's in there. What I might try to do is, once you start it, is try to drive through that tank of gas really quick and get a fresh tank in there. But there's not a lot you can do now, and I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, Donna, have a good day.
You too.
All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text and any of your car questions. So I really love this piece here about the that's on the Daily Drive. The Datsuns of 1983.
Yes.
And I love just sometimes how you guys just pick like random years, and some of these, talk a little bit about some of these cars. What was what and why did you pick Datsuns?
Yeah, no, this is a slightly less random year. 1983 is a really interesting year in the history of Datsun / Nissan.
Oh, okay.
Because it is the year that Datsun became Nissan.
Oh, I see.
But not entirely. So what Datsun did was when it rolled out new models, they became Nissans. But the old one stayed Datsun.
Oh.
So 83 was a strange year where three of the products were Datsuns and three of the products were Nissans in the same showroom.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. It was completely crazy.
Yeah. Wow. And they look like cars from 1983, I got to tell you.
They do. My favorite thing about this is that this is Datsun, and it was supposed to be, you know, a Japanese car maker, and they're supposed to be just a little bit more modern, building lighter, less perhaps over ornate vehicles, and yet they built a beautiful version of the station of a Cressida station wagon with woody trim. It looks fabulous.
Well, that's the first.
Maxima.
It's the Maxima GL wagon, and that's the first picture that you see of the actual piece on the Daily Drive blog, and that's a pretty special look. It would make Clark Griswold proud.
Yeah, I love that car.
Yeah,
I want that car.
You want the family truckster, right? That's what it was called. I would get that car only if Eugene Levy sold it to me. That would be the only way I would do it, because Eugene Levy is like one of my favorite used car salesmen in movies ever. You know, Kurt Russell takes the cake as far as I'm concerned with that. But yeah. Like, I loved Eugene. That first scene in Vacation is hilarious. What were some of the other more interesting vehicles that you wrote about in this year of 1983 with Datsun?
Okay, so we've got the Maxima that stayed Datsun that year,
mm-hmm.
and then we have the Pulsar. Now the Pulsar is a fabulous vehicle. If people remember, it was a little sporty coupe, or it was a little sporty hatchback, because you could pay, I think it was $400 extra for a fiberglass top that converted the vehicle into a station wagon or a camback, if they called it.
Oh yeah, I totally forgot about that. Yeah.
So that was awesome. Now, that vehicle being new that year, that was a Nissan.
By the way, I'm looking at the Pulsar. It's a cool-looking car.
Yeah, it's a great-looking car.
I mean, really cool-looking, like futuristic for 1983.
Yeah, and it was sold entirely on looks because it was mechanically uninteresting.
Okay.
The same year, the Sentra came out. That replaced the 310. So the Datsun 310 became the Nissan Sentra that year.
That's the first year of the Sentra, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
And the Stanza came out for the first time. That's the vehicle that would eventually become the Altima. And what's interesting is you have this car that we all know as sedans now, but these were all hatchbacks then for some reason.
Mm.
And then there's a super cool car, the 200SX. This is kind of forgotten by a lot of people, but this was kind of a spunky little sports hatchback. And then the legendary 280ZX, which is still a Datsun.
Yeah. Wow. The interesting stuff. And I love the pictures because it's just... You know, I love looking at what cars used to look like. I know that's one of your favorite things, too, going back and checking out the way cars used to look.
Yeah, the days I spend working on articles like this, I feel like I'm cheating. Like I should be doing some real work or something.
Yeah, well, it's a fun article. People can check it out at consumerguide.com, and you can check out the blog, the Daily Drive blog. You can find it right there and check out all the fantastic pictures. And I think I'm especially fond of that Pulsar, I got to tell you.
Oh, the Pulsar are so cool.
Yeah.
I still see those on the road. Those are being preserved.
Yeah. All right. That's cool. That's cool. We got a quick text here, Tom.
Uh-huh.
I have a question for Tom from the 847 area code. I want to buy a used crossover vehicle for under $15,000. I've been thinking of a Toyota RAV4 or a Honda CR-V. I'm wondering if Tom could recommend any reliable crossovers or SUVs in any maker model. And that's Mary who needs this.
Well, those are both great vehicles, the Honda CR-V and the Toyota RAV4 among our favorite compact crossovers. I would not hesitate to buy those, and you'd want to buy the newest one you can for your $15,000.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, vehicles, crossovers are kind of expensive and hold their value well now, and Toyotas and Hondas especially, but yeah, that's a great way to go.
Okay. All right. Those are both good. Okay.
Yep.
Here is Leo. He's in Chicago on WGN. Go ahead, Leo.
Hey, how you doing? I was having a question about the oil as far as conventional and the, what's the other oil we use? The synthetic.
Synthetic.
And, yeah, I've been doing the synthetic oil changes but I got low on the oil and I added a quarter of provincial oil. Would that be a problem?
No, it's not a problem. They tell you not to do that, and the reason they do it is you're diluting the impact of having the synthetic oil. Synthetic oil is known primarily for reducing friction, so cars a little bit easier to start in cold weather, and your fuel economy should be a little bit better, and it's also known to protect parts a little bit better as well. Some manufacturers now require synthetic oil, which really raises the price of an oil change, but it'll also probably keep your engine running longer. You shouldn't mix the oil just because you don't want to dilute the impact of the synthetic you've already paid for, but you haven't done any damage.
Right. Okay.
All right, Leo.
Now one other question, if you got a moment. I got the Chevy Impala. The Chevy, are they going away with the Impala? I heard, you know?
Yes, they are. The Impala is already out of production.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was the flagship car at one time.
It really was. Times change, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Leo, thanks for the call, buddy.
All right, thank you.
Take care. There you go. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Before we move on to some other stories and take some calls and some texts, and again, any automotive question or concern, Tom can help you out. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We talked about the piece that you wrote about our listener, Doc.
Yes.
And we talked about that, and then Doc called in. Well, when it was published, and we talked again about it. But now I want to get your point of view. And first of all, the first thing I want to do is I want to thank you for all the kind words you said about this show. It was really nice. It was a really nice way. You know, it's like the first paragraph. I'm like, oh, that's really nice, man. And I appreciate that.
Well, all heartfelt. I love doing the show, and I love your listeners. So
that's great. And so Doc is a character. Let's talk a little bit about this for people who might not have heard. What was the story? And I love the picture of Doc here. And for some reason, I got to tell you, Tom, I was not surprised when I saw the picture that he looked like that. You know what I mean? I just was not surprised at all. So tell everybody about Doc and the piece you wrote.
I love the beard, and Doc, when you talk to Doc on the phone, Doc sounds completely normal, but he does crazy things. That's Doc. And for people who don't know, Doc put 1,000,000 miles on his 2008 Honda Civic, and he did it the hard way. He drives for a living. He's a courier. And he has this incredible route that runs from his home near Kansas City, Missouri, to Des Moines and to St. Louis, and he runs this triangle a lot. And by Doc's own estimate, and this is borne out by the mileage he's accumulated on his vehicles, he drives 4,000 miles a week.
Isn't that amazing?
That is absolutely amazing. I don't know how anyone does that. I don't know how an over-the-road trucker would do that.
Yeah.
But he does that. And so he has put all this mileage on his Honda Civic, which he loves. And the amazing thing about his Civic is he's still on the original engine, and he's only gone through one transmission. So he's taking care of his vehicle, and he thanks the people at his local Honda dealership for taking care of him. But when you get to talk to Daryl, you learned a little bit about the guy. And he's had a really interesting life.
Yeah.
He estimates that he's had 45 full and part-time jobs. While in high school, he started a tropical fish business, which he sold for a profit before he went to college. I love this guy.
I do, too.
So we exchanged a bunch of emails, finally talked on the phone for probably the better part of an hour. It was great talking to Doc, but he's a huge fan of both yours and the show before yours.
Patty.
So, big WGN fan.
Yeah.
But so that's cool.
He's a great guy, and the article's really interesting. And how often do people hit 1,000,000?
That's fairly rare.
Yeah.
1,000,000 is fairly rare. It's just the car wears out.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's legendary Volvo P1900, which is a vehicle that the Saint drove, that someone has somewhere with 5 million miles on it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and that is amazing, but cars were so much simpler to keep running then.
Yeah.
It would be much harder to do that now.
Isn't it crazy that all he had was just he only went through one transmission? Isn't that nuts?
That is. That's amazing. That's a total testament to the car and total testament to his attention to the maintenance.
Yeah. And he's been going to the same dealership this whole time. For the past 11 years, he's had the car.
Yeah, it's the only car he bought new. He bought it at that dealership, and he's trusted that dealership for all the service. And he has nothing but good things to say about them. And he has a lot to say about bringing them pizza and donuts, too. He thinks that may have contributed to the quality of his service.
Now, he's got another vehicle or two other vehicles, correct, that he drives?
He's got a Honda Odyssey, which I think he had 250,000 miles on.
Jeez.
So that's a relative baby. He had a Honda Del Sol for a long time. I don't know if people remember the Del Sol. It was sort of a semi-convertible Civic. It was a really interesting vehicle that he put, I thought it was 450,000 miles
on. It's unbelievable, man. And also, what does this say about Honda? I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, and also, he's loyal to Honda. There's no question about that.
Yeah, he's very Honda loyal, and Honda's certainly been good to him. And speaking of synthetic oil, he swears by synthetic oil,
mm-hmm.
Which actually probably in this case really mattered. But it's all... It's a great story.
Yeah, well, it is a great story, and Doc is a really unique guy and one of our faithful listeners, and we appreciate him listening, and I'm glad that you were able to hook up with him and write this story.
Yeah, it was a joy talking to him.
Very, very cool. So you can check out Doc and his Million Mile Civic at the Daily Drive blog, and enjoy the pictures, by the way. I want to tell you that. All right, Tom, hang on, okay?
Will do.
All right, Tom Appel is here. Any and all automotive or car-related questions, 312-981-7200. The phone lines are open. The text lines are open. Call or text us now, and Tom Appel will help you with your car needs. And again, you can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. More with Tom Appel after this break on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here every weekday morning from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. It's Tuesday. That means two for Tuesday. You hear me? Two for Tuesday. That's one artist, two songs. Get your request in now. We'll play them in a little bit. And that's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. That is also the number to call or text in your car or automotive-related questions, because Tom Appel is here from Consumer Guide Automotive. Follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. We talk about car-related news and also take your questions at 312-981-7200. And let's welcome Tom back to the show. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
All righty then. Let's see. We got a couple of texts that have just come in.
All right.
773 area code says, thoughts on the Kia Sorento, please.
Oh, the Kia Sorento. That was freshened a couple of years ago. That is Kia's mid-size crossover. Doesn't get discussed a lot. And it's kind of mid-pack, I would not tell you not to drive it. I think you should probably go out and test drive it. There's probably good deals to be had on the vehicle. We just prefer the Highlander and the Pilot and other vehicles in that class, but there's no reason not to look at, and you do get Kia's awesome warranty, which is best in class.
Oh, there we go. Okay, so the Kia Sorento, yes. It says 224 Erico, this is Laura. She says, I'm a very, very large lady, and I do not drive, but I'm always a passenger, and sometimes I'll not be able to buckle up. Is there a way to legally do that so I could go in and not have to wear it? Now, here's the interesting thing, Tom. You're a really big guy, right?
I'm a really big guy, yeah.
All right. Has this ever been an issue, buckling up?
In a couple of cars.
Okay.
And it's interesting, the cars that it's a problem in for me, and it's cars with off-road intentions, so Jeep and Land Rover and Range Rover products. And that's intentional. They don't want a lot of slack in the belt if you're actually going off-road.
Oh, I see.
And the best way to handle this is you want to get an extension.
Mm-hmm.
Is what you can do, and you can buy that, and it just adds like 6 inches, and it just goes between the buckle and the buckle in your car, and that's the best way to handle that. And it's interesting because the passenger side is usually a smaller belt loop than the one on the driver's side for some reason. So I have run into this over the years.
Okay, all right. So, but there are extensions available. You can get them anywhere.
I don't know where you can get them. You might want to check with a dealer, because I have not looked for one myself,
okay.
But I know they're out there, and I don't think they're very expensive.
Okay. All right, Laura, so get yourself an extension and carry it around with you, and you can sit comfortably and legally in a car.
Yep.
So there you go. Hey, by the way, how was the auto show, Tom?
The auto show was great.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was a particularly good Chicago auto show this year. A lot of good introductions. And as always, McCormick Place is such a great place to see an auto show. It's one of the few places where you can cram almost a million people through a place in a week, and it won't feel too crowded.
Yeah.
Which is great. But, yeah, a lot of good new products there.
Was anything stand out?
Trying to think what the big news was there. there's anything really exciting. You know, what sadly isn't as exciting as it should be is there's an all-new Subaru Legacy. So there's a brand-new, all-new vehicle introduced there, but midsize sedans just aren't the big news they used to be, which is a shame because this is probably a great car.
Mm, okay, but it was overall a great show.
Great show.
Okay, very, very cool. See, Jay from Waukegan says, I just purchased a 2003 Cadillac DeVille with a Northstar V8 with only 70,000 miles. Any issues with this car that I should be aware of?
There were some issues with the Northstar engine that I can't quite recall. But no, I think they're generally fairly stout. For the record, Steve and Johnny of Overnight Fame are big DeVille fans, and they've had many, many, many successful years with the Northstar engine.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Very cool. All right. Here's another thing here that I wanted to talk about, a forgotten concept. The Briggs and Stratton hybrid. One of the strangest looking cars I've ever seen, and I don't remember this car at all. Tell me about this.
Yeah, unless you were reading Popular Mechanics in 1979, you probably never saw this car.
Okay.
And when you hear about it, you're going to wonder why there was this car. But in 1979, the Briggs & Stratton, the people who make small gasoline engines for lawnmowers and such, had brought out a new engine. It was a flat twin-cylinder engine that they wanted to promote. And when they finally thought of a way to do it, they came up with something insane, which was to build a car around this engine. But what was interesting is that their engineers went crazy, and they developed what is a very early but very effective hybrid engine.
Mm.
So it involved this very small gasoline engine plus an electric motor in a car with, for all sorts of reasons, 6 wheels.
And it's a very strange looking car. I mean, it looks like something you would see in Damnation Alley.
Yeah. Yes, it should be the second vehicle
right.
in Damnation Alley.
Well, what was the story behind this? How did it last? Was it received? I mean, it's just such a strange looking car.
It was actually reasonably well received because the hybrid system actually worked fairly well. It was incredibly slow because it was a 26 horsepower engine and an 8 horsepower motor for a combined 34 horsepower. Top speed of 55 miles an hour. So
it
wasn't really much more than an urban runabout. And the additional wheel axle in back was to support the weight of the batteries, because in those days there weren't lithium ion batteries or nickel metal hydride batteries. There was just car batteries, lead acid car batteries, and those were really heavy.
Yeah.
So to support the hybrid system, they needed about 1,000 pounds of batteries.
That's nuts.
Yeah, that was nuts. But the car looked pretty cool, and in fact, it worked pretty well in practice. I believe it might have been Popular Mechanics, but one testing outfit actually saw 80 miles per gallon driving the vehicle.
Wow.
So they got the system right. Now, you had to drive stick, which is really weird in a hybrid.
Oh, yeah.
And you had to put up with an incredibly slow car. But it was proof of concept, actually, and it was really interesting.
Are there any around?
I think there was just the one car that was ever actually functional.
Mm-hmm.
It was updated once, and I think it's in a museum in Milwaukee right now.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
So people can check it out. A forgotten concept, the Briggs & Stratton hybrid.
Yeah, that still exists.
What a crazy looking car, though. That's
it's awesome.
This is great. All right, one quick question before we let you go.
Okay.
708 area code says, I have a sweet 97 Z28 Camaro with the LT1. I want to slowly build this car. First on the list is cold air intake and custom exhaust, eliminating a lot of emissions like cars. Do I change out the car's computer to do this?
Well, if you're eliminating, I don't know now where Illinois testing, how far Illinois testing goes back, but make sure you're not still subject to that. 97 sounds like you're not. No, you still are, I think.
97?
Yeah, I think you got to check that because I thought it was 25 years. So you'd have to check on that. Cold air intake is always a great way to go. In terms of reprogramming, I don't know a lot about aftermarket EEPROM chips.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. All right, Tom, always a pleasure. I'm glad the auto show was so cool.
It was.
Very, very cool. Again, Tom is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He writes for the Daily Drive blog and writes a lot of fun stuff for that blog. And you can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. Tom, always a pleasure. Have a great month, and we'll talk to you next time.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Okay, buddy, take care. Tom Appel, everybody. Consumer Guide Automotive. Again, follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom.